The other day I was asked, just why was it that the Pandava brothers and the Kaurava brothers seemed to be at such enmity between themselves? How did this grow to such an extent that one side was quite happy to kill the other side? I think one has to look at it at various levels. If you take the big picture, an overview, frankly, I don't think we should be too surprised. Because remember what happened was that in Sri Aurobindo's terminology, way of speaking, the balance of forces were dramatically out of balance. In other words, the divine forces were being swamped by the undivine forces. So Mother Earth went to Brahma, the creating god, and said to him that she could no longer stand this burden. In actual fact, she had to go to him again to remind him, but he said that he would sort it out. You may remember that the axe-wielding Brahmin, an avatar who'd taken on the role of a Kshatriya, had 21 times cleared the world of these oppressive, despotic rulers, these despotic kings. What had happened was, in fact, that the Brahmins, the holy men, had married Kshatriya wives who were left behind after this massacre by Parasurama and produced another race of Kshatriyas. In fact, for quite a time after this situation, it was referred to as the Golden Age. Everything went right. There was all the castes lived as they should do. They lived by Dharma. So for the businessmen, there was plenty of food. The farms were fine. The Kshatriyas, the rulers, ruled fairly. And the Brahmins performed their sacrifices and all the other activities they did in the way they should do. But as time went on, more and more asuras reincarnated into the world. The demons came back and now were in abundance and now were, as I've mentioned earlier, completely overburdening Mother Earth. So Brahma decreed that the deities should partially reincarnate into the world. There should be partial reincarnations. And this took place whereby the imbalance of the asuric forces against the divine forces began to occur. And thus you can see that it was actually ordained that the Asuras, the Rakshasas, would be overcome by the gods. And you can see from this that it was the gods, the deities and the demons, the Asuras, were playing a chess game. They were the players and we were the pieces being moved around the chess table. And this point couldn't have been more clearly put over than at the beginning of the battle, when both of the sides, the Kauravas and Pandavas, were all lined up, just about to fight. In fact, there'd been a bit of a false start. The Kauravas had suddenly burst out with conches, drums, trumpets, heavens knows what. Immediately, the Pandavas on the opposite side had done the same. And it was only Bhishma who was managed to hold it back when he saw Arjuna's chariot coming out into the centre of the no-man's land. And if you remember, Arjuna said, take me to Krishna, who was his charioteer, take me to the centre so I can see the troops on the other side. I can array the troops. And when he saw them, he saw his grand-uncle, really. They called him the grandfather, Bhishma, Drona, his relations, his other friends. And he couldn't take it. His hair went on to end. He began to shake. He slumped back. His bow dropped out of his hand. He said, I can't fight. These are all my relations. Let them win. I'm not going to fight. And Krishna didn't mince his words. He gave him the reasons about the soul. Remember in chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita. But he was quite emphatic that these people, it had been ordained, they were dead already. They were the moving dead. And if Arjuna wouldn't kill them, someone else would. Their number was up. And by hook or by crook, righteousness would prevail. But if we look at things from a human point of view, we really have to go back to the beginnings. In fact, not far back from where we were before, talking about the three Kasi princesses that were abducted by Bhishma to be wives to his half-brother. Because of premature deaths and so forth, it was only really the third princess, Ambalika, that produced two half-brothers to Bhishma. The blind King Dhritarashtra was the first son, and Pandu, the pale, anemic-faced brother, was the second son. Bhishma, working closely with Queen Satyavati, the queen and daughter of the fisherman king that Bhishma's father had married, really placed Bhishma in the position of prince regent. So it was he who decreed that because Dhritarashtra was blind, although he was the first of the sons, he would not be able to rule. And therefore Pandu took over the rulership. both were very strong. And Pandu, in fact, he was not only strong, but he was pretty smart. He married Kunti and Madri, and of course they were the mothers of the Pandavas. During this period, in fact, during the period of Santanu, coming up to the birth of these two brothers, the kingdom of the Kurus was actually being nibbled at. They were losing quite a bit of it to neighbouring nations that were by conquest or taking bits and pieces. So one of the first things that Pandu did was to put together a very strong army, and he became a conqueror. A bit like Napoleon, he went all over the place around him, reconquering and conquering further nations, which expanded like anything the Kuru nation itself. And of course he picked up an enormous amount of wealth and tribute, and it wasn't just jewels and gems, it was servants, it was animals, all sorts of blankets and silks and heavens knows what. And this wasn't like the Rajasuriya. Remember the great big sacrifice when Yudhishthira was anointed king and there was tribute paid by various nations that they were close to or they made close to them. And also the horse sacrifice where the same sort of thing occurred. This was straightforward, going in there, conquering, taking tribute, and that was that. And when he came back, of course, they were delighted. Bhishma came out with a whole crowd to greet him as he came into the city. The wealth was extraordinary, and he was pretty generous with it. He gave a lot to Bhishma, he gave a lot to his brother Dhritarashtra and his mother, Satyavati, and also to Vidura and others. And actually, he became a man of leisure. Instead of being burdened down with the everyday frustrations that there must have been in ruling and kingship and so forth, he took to the woods, he took to the forest, he took his two wives with him, and he fully armed, bow, sword, armor, this sort of thing. And he really roamed around hunting, loved hunting. And what used to happen at the command of Dhritarashtra, his brother, various servants would come out with the bits and pieces he wanted, and he was just having a pretty easy, jolly time. But then he fell foul of a curse. He killed a deer whilst it was mating, and the upshot was that he couldn't procreate. He hadn't had any children by then. There was, at that time, in fact, not that time, right up to recent times, it was felt by many that if you didn't have a family, if you didn't have sons to continue the line of the family, that really wasn't much of a ticket to heaven. But you couldn't have the sacrifices and all that's necessary to help your relations that were there, and you just hadn't performed your duty properly without that. So he was under pressure to have children. And in fact, Kunti approached him on this. And she, in the course of the conversation, it came out that she, remember, she had this arrangement whereby she had a boon given to her by the grumpy seer, Devarshis, that she could call on at any time, any of the deities, and they would procreate and produce a child for her, a boy for her. Actually, a little earlier, Pandu put his foot in it a bit because he talked to the ascetics, he talked to the hermits, all those around him that he hobnobbed with, lived with, brushed shoulders with all the time about this problem of getting to heaven and no children. And they said to him, well, look, there are many ways of doing this. And they cited a story whereby a person in the same position as Kunti without children actually stood at a crossroads with a flower, and it's a matter of picking the right person to sire the child. The right Brahmin came along and he did the works. But in actual fact, Pandu said this to her, that there were various ways of doing it and it could be done this. She got pretty shirty. She wasn't having that. She said, I'm your lawful wife and I'll do things the proper way. I'm not having this. So it was agreed that they would call upon Lord Dharma. If the way of producing a child wasn't lawful, then Dharma wouldn't allow it. So in fact, this is what they did. They produced offerings and so forth. And Dharma eventually came, and the child was born almost immediately. And as he was born, one of these disembodied voices came from heaven and said, this son will be a great king. He will be of the greatest upholder of law and Dharma. And his name would be Yudhishthira. But things weren't going all that well back at Hastinapura, the Kauravas. And we'll come into this a little bit later. But in fact, Gandhari, Dhritarashtra's wife, had been pregnant for about a year. This is a pretty protracted two-year pregnancy. So in fact, she was still pregnant when Yudhishthira was born. And at this birth, when Dhritarashtra talked things over with the Brahmins and so forth, he agreed quite openly that in fact Yudhishthira would be the firstborn and therefore the heir to the Kuru nation. back in the forests, Pandu said that the Kshatriya as a caste flourishes with strength. Therefore, could the next son be a strong son? So, in fact, Kunti summoned up the wind god, Vayu, and by him had the child. And when the child appeared, this disembodied voice said that, in fact, this child will be a man that will be the strongest of the strongest. And on this very day, Duryodhana was born at the same time. Then Pandu deliberated for the third son. He said, the whole world is dependent upon fate or destiny and man's own deeds. And what he wanted was a person, a child, who was really a superman. And for that he said, well, Indra is the king of all the gods. He encapsulates, he incorporates all the highest values that is needed for a world superman. In order to try and get Indra as a father of the sun, they went into austerities, both of them, for a whole year, supplicating and trying to find favour with Indra for a whole year. And it worked. And when the child was born, again, this disembodied voice came. And he taught for a long time how this would be the greatest of warriors, how he, in fact, would vanquish all his foes. And it quite specifically stated the lands that it would be conquered and how they would all come under his sway and what a great person he was. Well, my time is up. And if you have been listening, thanks very much. Goodbye.